Chapter 53. Mr. Buckstone's campaign was brief, much briefer than he supposed it would be. He began it purposing to win Laura without being won himself. But his experience was that of all who had fought on that field before him. He diligently continued his effort to win her, but he presently found that, while as yet he could not feel entirely certain of having won her, it was very manifest that as he had won him. He had made an able fight, brief as it was, and that at least was to his credit. He was in good company now. He walked in a leash of conspicuous captives. These unfortunates followed Laura helplessly, for whenever she took a prisoner he remained her slave henceforth. Sometimes they chafed in their bondage, sometimes they tore themselves free, and said their serfdom was ended. But sooner or later they always came back penitent and worshipping. Laura pursued her usual course. She encouraged Mr. Buckstone by turns, and by turns she harassed him. She exalted him to the clouds at one time, and at another she dragged him down again. She constituted him chief champion of the Knobs University Bill, and he accepted the position, at first reluctantly, but later as a valued means of serving her. He even came to look upon it as a piece of great good fortune, since it brought him into such frequent contact with her. Through him she learned that the Hon. Mr. Trollope was a bitter enemy of her Bill. He urged her not to attempt to influence Mr. Trollope in any way, and explained that whatever she might attempt in that direction would surely be used against her, and with damaging effect. She at first said she knew Mr. Trollope, and was aware that he had a blank blank, her private figure of speech for brother or son-in-law, but Mr. Buckstone said that he was not able to conceive what so curious a phrase as blank blank might mean, and had no wish to pry into the matter, since it was probably private. He old nevertheless venture the blind assertion that nothing would answer in this particular case, and during this particular session, but to be exceedingly wary, and keep clear away from Mr. Trollope. Any other course would be fatal. It seemed that nothing could be done. Laura was seriously troubled. Everything was looking well, and yet it was plain that one vigorous and determined enemy might eventually succeed in overthrowing all her plans. A suggestion came into her mind presently, and she said, "Can't you fight against his great pension bill, and bring him to terms?" "Oh, never. He and I are sworn brothers on that measure. We work in harness, and are very loving. I do everything I possibly can for him there. But I work with might and main against his immigration bill, as pertinaciously and as vindictively, indeed, as he works against our university. We hate each other through half a conversation, and are all affection through the other half. We understand each other. He is an admirable worker outside the capital. He will do more for the pension bill than any other man could do. I wish he would make the great speech on it which he wants to make, and then I would make another, and we would be safe." "Well, if he wants to make a great speech, why doesn't he do it?" Visitors interrupted the conversation, and Mr. Buckstone took his leave. It was not of the least moment to Laura that her question had not been answered, inasmuch as it concerned a thing which did not interest her, and yet, human being-like, she thought she would have liked to know. An opportunity occurring presently, she put the same question to another person, and got an answer that satisfied her. She pondered a good while that night, after as he had gone to bed, and when she finally turned over to go to sleep, as he had thought out a new scheme. The next evening at Mrs. Gloverson's party, she said to Mr. Buckstone, "I want Mr. Trollope to make his great speech on the pension bill. Do you? But you remember I was interrupted, and did not explain to you." "Never mind, I know. You must make him make that speech. I very particularly desire it." "Oh, it is easy to say make him do it, but how am I to make him?" "It is perfectly easy. I have thought it all out." She then went into the details. At length Mr. Buckstone said, "I see now. I can manage it, I am sure. Indeed, I wonder he never thought of it himself. There are no end of precedents. But how is this going to benefit you, after I have managed it? There is where the mystery lies. But I will take care of that. It will benefit me a great deal. I only wish I could see how. It is the oddest freak. You seem to go the furthest around to get at a thing, but you are in earnest, aren't you?
Yes, I am, indeed.
Very well, I will do it, but why not tell me how you imagine it is going to help you?
I will, by and by.
Now there is nobody talking to him. Go straight and do it, there's a good fellow. A moment or two later the two sworn friends of the pension bill were talking together, earnestly, and seemingly unconscious of the moving throng about them. They talked an hour, and then Mr. Buckstone came back and said. He hardly fancied it at first, but he fell in love with it after a bit. And we have made a compact too. I am to keep his secret, and he is to spare me, in future, when he gets ready to denounce the supporters of the university bill, and I can easily believe he will keep his word on this occasion. A fortnight elapsed, and the university bill had gathered to itself many friends. Meantime, Senator Dilworthy began to think the harvest was ripe. He conferred with Laura privately. She was able to tell him exactly how the House would vote. There was a majority the bill would pass, unless weak members got frightened at the last, and deserted, a thing pretty likely to occur. The senator said, I wish we had one more good strong man. Now Trollope ought to be on our side, for he is a friend of the Negro. But he is against us, and is our bitterest opponent. If he would simply vote no, but keep quiet, and not molest us, I would feel perfectly cheerful and content. But perhaps there is no use in thinking of that. Why, I laid a little plan for his benefit 2 weeks ago. I think he will be tractable, maybe. He is to come here tonight. Look out for him, my child. He means mischief, sure. It is said that he claims to know of improper practices having been used in the interest of this bill, and he thinks, he sees a chance to make a great sensation when the bill comes up. Be wary. Be very, very careful, my dear. Do your very ablest talking now. You can convince a man of anything when you try. You must convince him that, if anything improper has been done, you at least are ignorant of it and sorry for it. And if you could only persuade him out of his hostility to the bill, too, but don't overdo the thing. Don't seem too anxious, dear.
I won't. I'll be ever so careful. I'll talk as sweetly to him, as if he were my own child.
You may trust me, indeed you may. The doorbell rang.
That is the gentleman now, said Laura. Senator Dilworthy retired to his study.
Laura welcomed Mr. Trollope, a grave, carefully dressed and very respectable-looking man, with a bald head, standing collar and old-fashioned watch seals.
Promptness is a virtue, Mr. Trollope, and I perceive that you have it. You are always prompt with me.
I always meet my engagements, of every kind, Miss Hawkins.
It is a quality which is rarer in the world than it has been, I believe.
I wish to see you on business, Mr. Trollope.
I judged so.
What can I do for you?
You know my bill, the Knox University bill?
Ah, I believe it is your bill.
I had forgotten.
Yes, I know the bill.
Well, would you mind telling me your opinion of it?
Indeed, since you seem to ask it without reserve, I am obliged to say that I do not regard it favorably.
I have not seen the bill itself, but from what I can hear, it has a bad look about it.
Speak it out, never fear.
Well, they say it contemplates a fraud upon the government.
Well? Said Laura tranquilly.
Well,
I say well,
apostrophe to.
Well, suppose it were a fraud which I feel able to deny, would it be the first one?
You take a body's breath away.
Did you wish me to vote for it?
Was that what you wanted to see me about?
Your instinct is correct. I do want you
to vote for it.
Vote for AFR for a measure which is generally believed to be at least questionable?
I am afraid we cannot come to an understanding, Miss Hawkins.
No, I am afraid
Not if you have resumed your principles, Mr. Trollope. Did you send for me merely to insult me? It is time for me to take my leave, Miss Hawkins.
No, wait a moment. Don't be offended at a trifle. Do not be offish and unsociable. The steamship subsidy bill was a fraud on the government. You voted for it, Mr. Trollope, though you always opposed the measure until after you had an interview one evening with a certain Mrs. McCarter at her house. She was my agent. She was acting for me.
Ah, that is right, sit down again. You can be sociable, easily enough if you have a mind to.
Well? I am waiting. Have you nothing to say?
Miss Hawkins, I voted for that bill because when I came to examine into it,
When you came to examine into it.
Well, I only want you to examine into my bill.
Mr. Trollope, you would not sell your vote on that subsidy bill, which was perfectly right, but you accepted of some of the stock, with the understanding that it was to stand in your brother in Dashlaw's name.
There is no PR, I mean, this is utterly groundless, Miss Hawkins.
But the gentleman seemed somewhat uneasy, nevertheless.
Well, not entirely so, perhaps. I and a person whom we will call Miss Blank, never mind the real name, were in a closet at your elbow all the while.
Mr. Trollope winced, then he said with dignity,
Miss Hawkins, is it possible that you were capable of such a thing as that?
It was bad. I confess that. It was bad.
Almost as bad as selling one's vote for, but I forget. You did not sell your vote, you only accepted a little trifle, a small token of esteem, for your brother-in-law.
Oh, let us come out and be frank with each other.
I know you, Mr. Trollope. I have met you on business 3 or 4 times.
True, I never offered to corrupt your principles, never hinted such a thing. But always when I had finished sounding you, I manipulated you through an agent.
Let us be frank. Wear this comely disguise of virtue before the public, it will count there, but here it is out of place.
My dear sir, by and by there is going to be an investigation into that National Internal Improvement Director's relief measure of a few years ago, and you know very well that you will be a crippled man, as likely as not, when it is completed.
It cannot be shown that a man is a knave merely for owning that stock.
I am not distressed about the National Improvement Relief Measure.
Oh, indeed, I am not trying to distress you.
I only wished to make good my assertion that I knew you.
Several of you gentlemen bought of that stack without paying a penny down, received dividends from it.
Think of the happy idea of receiving dividends, and very large ones too, from stock one hasn't paid for.
And all the while your names never appeared in the transaction. If ever you took the stock at all, you took it in other people's names.
Now you see, you had to know one of two things. Namely, you either knew that the idea of all this preposterous generosity was to bribe you into future legislative friendship, or you didn't know it.
That is to say, you had to be either a knave or a fool. There was no middle ground.
You are not a fool, Mr. Trollope.
Miss Hawking, you flatter me. But seriously, you do not forget that some of the best and purest men in Congress took that stock in that way?
Did Senator Bland?
Well, no, I believe not.
Of course you believe not.
Do you suppose he was ever approached on the subject?
Perhaps not.
If you had approached him, for instance, fortified with the fact that some of the best men in Congress, and the purest, etc., etc., what would have been the result?
Well, what would have been the result?
He would have shown you the door.
For Mr. Blank is neither a knave nor a fool. There are other men in the Senate and the House whom no one would have been hardy enough to approach with that relief stock in that peculiarly generous way, but they are not of the class that you regard as the best and purest.
No, I say I know you, Mr. Trollope.
That is to say, one may suggest a thing to Mr. Trollope which it would not do to suggest to Mr. Blank.
Mr. Trollope, you are pledged to support the indigent congressman's retroactive appropriation which is to come up, either in this or the next session.
You do not deny that, even in public.
The man that will vote for that bill will break the Eighth Commandment in any other way, sir.
But he will not vote for your corrupt measure, nevertheless, madam, exclaimed Mr. Trollope, rising from his seat in a passion.
Ah, but he will. Sit down again, and let me explain why.
Oh, come, don't behave so. It is very unpleasant.
Now be good, and you shall have the missing page of your great speech.
Here it is. And she displayed a sheet of manuscript.
Mr. Trollope turned immediately back from the threshold. It might have been gladness that flashed into his face. It might have been something else. But at any rate there was much astonishment mixed with it.
Good. Where did you get it?
Give it me. Now there is no hurry. Sit down. Sit down and let us talk and be friendly.
The gentleman wavered. Then he said,
No, this is only a subterfuge. I will go. It is not the missing page.
Laura tore off a couple of lines from the bottom of the sheet.
Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.